From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Zoe Gruskin with a local and statewide news update. A divided federal appeals court panel finds Alaska's cap on total contributions that candidates can receive from non-residents is unconstitutional. However, the three-judge panel unanimously upheld other campaign contribution limits that it said were narrowly tailored to prevent corruption or the appearance of corruption. The case was brought by three individuals and a subgroup of the Alaska Republican Party who challenged various aspects of state campaign finance law. Governor-elect Mike Dunleavy's cabinet is taking shape with several key positions announced Monday to lead state agencies. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, only one has worked for a state government.
The governor-elect recently tapped Jeremy Price to be his deputy chief of staff. Price grew up in Alaska and from 2014 until recently worked for a conservative group advocating less industry regulation.
We support lower taxes, limited government, and accountability for our elected officials.
That's Price speaking as head of the Alaska chapter of Americans for Prosperity. Founded in 2004, it's largely bankrolled by the billionaire Koch brothers.
The Kochs started the organization years ago, so we're supported by them as well as donors in Alaska and throughout the country.
He's also worked as Congressman Don Young's legislative director and as an aide to Senator Lisa Murkowski. He then worked for the American Petroleum Institute. Price isn't the only oil and gas industry veteran tapped for a cabinet position. Jason Bruni will be Commissioner of Environmental Conservation. Bruni also recently worked as Land and Resources Director for CIRI, that's Cook Inlet Region Incorporated, a native corporation that's South Central Alaska's largest private landowner.
He is tenacious. He is detail-orientated.
Kara Moriarty is President and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. She said Bruni's undergraduate degree in biology and graduate work in environmental science allows him to get into the weeds when talking policy.
He is very committed and loyal to whoever he works for, and so I think he'll do an amazing job representing the state's interests.
Bruni has also served on several boards, including the Cook Inlet Beluga Recovery Team and Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Public Advisory Committee. That makes him known among environmentalists, guys like Cook Inlet Keepers Bob Shavelson.
Well, I've known Jason for a long time. I know him when he was the Resource Development Council. He's someone you can certainly talk to. He's open-minded. He also has a very strong pro-development slant. So that's what we would expect from the Dunleavy administration.
Shavelson said he's skeptical that the incoming governor will be able to address the state's fiscal problems through expanded resource development.
But I think we will see a much stronger emphasis on opening up large oil, gas, and mining projects.
The incoming commissioner for health and social services is from Wasilla. The transition team touts Adam Crum's private sector experience. He's executive vice president of Northern Industrial Training.
If you're 18 years or older and you want to make the most out of life, become a maker with a little help from Northern Industrial Training.
The Palmer-based firm offers welding classes and other vocational development courses. Crum has a master's in public health from Johns Hopkins University, and 2 years ago he made a failed primary challenge against Senator Shelley Hughes, a Wasilla Republican. Pat Martin of Alaska Right to Life recalls meeting the Senate hopeful.
We spent considerable time with him. We of course, asked him a lot of questions about his positions on protecting life, and he's one of the candidates that we endorsed back in 2016.
The group says it wants to protect all life from the moment of conception. That means an end to abortion in Alaska.
And so if Adam's role in the Department of Health and Social Services is such that he can make an impact on that, then we're all for it.
The right to abortion is protected by the U.S. and Alaska constitutions.
It's not just about the right. It's also about ensuring access.
Treasurer Mackley is with Planned Parenthood's regional office in Seattle.
It's ensuring that you have the ability to access a provider. You have the ability to access the birth control that you need. It's about having the ability to access a doctor.
The state social services agency controls access, especially for rural and low-income women. Dunleavy's decision to elevate Crum from a conservative political hopeful to head the state's social services agency?
That's deeply concerning for us.
Other appointments include Jonathan Quick as Commissioner of Administration. He comes from the Kenai Peninsula Borough, where he oversaw hundreds of public workers. As the state's administration commissioner, he'll oversee thousands. Dunleavy's budget director will be Donna Ardwin. Of his latest batch of picks, she's the only one with state-level experience. She's worked for Florida politicians Marco Rubio, Rick Scott, and Jeb Bush, and for California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger as he tried to weather that state's fiscal crisis. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Alaska fishermen haven't been having an easy time with the changing climate. The cod population in the Gulf of Alaska is at its lowest level on record. Officials have declared disaster after the failure of multiple Alaska salmon fisheries. So what's happening farther north in Alaska might surprise you. Fishermen there have been landing huge catches in numbers that haven't been seen in decades. Nat Hertz with Alaska's Energy Desk spent some time with a fisherman in the northwest Alaska hub town of Kotzebue who's trying to make sense of it all.
Seth Kantner is sitting in his pickup truck next to the beach in Kotzebue, looking out over the stretch of sound where he goes commercial fishing every year. The truck is a nice Honda, pretty new. But as we sit and talk in the cab, the battery dies. He gets out to jumpstart it with one of those self-starter things.
This truck was bought with fish profits, but it's got all these computers that tell it what to do and everything. And so every time you turn around, the battery's dead.
So that's why you bought the special starter?
Jump starter, yeah. That's a pretty amazing invention. It's right up there with the iPhone and the bait pen, I guess.
Kantner grew up in a sod igloo, 150 miles from Kotzebue on the Kobuk River. He's also a writer, and as you can probably tell, he's a little curmudgeonly about things like modernity and change. For Kantner, one of the biggest changes in Kotzebue and the surrounding region over the past few years has been in the weather and the seasons. Some of those changes, he thinks, are feeding into his work as a commercial salmon fisherman, which has been booming. This past summer, he says,
I broke 200,000 pounds, which to me is, I can't believe it, because last year, I fished to the last day, which I haven't done in years, to try to break 100,000 pounds, which was far and away the most I'd ever caught.
Just to be clear, Kantner is saying that two summers ago, he caught more fish than he'd ever caught before. And then this summer, he caught twice that much again. Salmon fishing in northwest Alaska isn't nearly as lucrative as the big commercial harvest in places like Bristol Bay, but there are more than 200 active commercial permit holders in the region, with gross earnings of more than $4 million last year. Kantner isn't the only one who's been doing well. This year's commercial harvest of chum salmon in Kotzebue Sound was nearly 700,000 fish, breaking a record nearly four decades old. To the south, the value of the commercial salmon catch in Norton Sound was also the highest ever. You can tell just from the metaphors that Jim Menard, the area management biologist, uses to describe the runs over the past few years. Here's one.
Going blazing guns.
Two.
Gangbusters.
And three.
The runs are on steroids.
One example was at the Nome River outside of town. Menard says in the past, a good pink salmon run would be about a million fish. This year, there were more than three times that. Menard describes looking into the river and seeing a solid black wall of salmon.
I'd be throwing up my fishing line trying to reel it across and be snagging a pink in the back. You know, you're not even trying to catch anything. There's just so many pinks.
Menard says he thinks relatively warm winters are helping fuel the region's strong salmon returns. And in the nearby Chukchi and Bering Seas, where the fish spend time before spawning, temperatures have been way above average in recent years. Scientists caution against linking a single year's conditions or even a several-year-long stretch to climate change, but they do say that ocean temperatures are expected to gradually rise due to global warming, with sea ice expected to diminish. Those warmer ocean temperatures are more hospitable to species like sockeye and pink salmon, as well as chums, which are the commercially caught fish in Kotzebue. That's because when the water is warmer, there's more abundant food for them, like certain types of plankton and small fish, says Ed Farley, a federal fisheries scientist in Juneau.
This loss of sea ice is shifting the food web, and it's also warmer, so salmon do better in that environment.
You might think Kantner, the Kotzebue fisherman, would be excited about this, but his feelings are a lot more complicated, in part because his lifestyle revolves around much more than fish.
Because I like ducks and caribou and salmon, and I'm worried something might happen where they just can't deal with it and then we don't have them anymore.
And while global warming might be better for salmon fishing, it's also likely to make for scarcer ice, an essential platform for winter transportation in the region. Kantner says it's hard to get excited about more fish when there are so many other things he could lose. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
That's the latest. I'm Zoe Gruskin.